Hello, Motipitham, and you are watching Once a Warrior. With me is an absolute star in many lanes, but today we're talking rugby league and the Warriors. Macca, thanks for your time, Mark Ellis.
How are you, mate?
I am very good, man. So good. What are you up to these days? Are you spending your millions? What's keeping you busy?
Oh, as little as I can, to be perfectly honest. I'm trying to sort of slide under the radar and do one or two things that don't require too much manual or too much hard work.
Yeah, okay. Last year, 2023, it was a crazy year for the Warriors. Yeah. It was a movement from afar, and I know you're a busy man. What did you see and what did you enjoy?
Well, I think testimony to how they've been going in recent times is that my boy plays rugby for Ponsonby, right, which is the big club that feeds the All Blacks, and it's rah, rah, rah. And they had their end-of-year function out at the Warriors, watching the Warriors. So, I mean, if you're getting, you know, Ponsonby Rugby Junior teams going out to watch the Warriors instead of watching the Blues, they're doing something right. Yeah. And, you know, the whole package from the halftime entertainment, just to the amount of gameplay that you get, the minutes per game versus rugby, it's just a pleasure to watch. And it's easy to get behind. And you can sell it to a housewife in Holland because there's 10 rules, not 120. It's a great product. I don't know anything directly, but it would appear that the coach has managed to motivate the men to play as a team and to believe in a movement, and the brand of the movement's really good, and these guys have got a way of going about it, and they've got mental fortitude and solidarity and belief behind a movement, so it's compelling to watch.
So let's go back to that time in the jumper and just have a look and reminisce.
Former All Black, Mark Ellis. Ellis up from fullback. Mark Ellis! Choke time! Ellis will have to do it on his own, and he does! Back for Ellis. Ellis with powers through. But Ellis now. Ellis will bring the house down. This is the man they want to get across the line. Trying to get on the outside. He's done it! Mark Ellis! And Ellis should disappear. Ellis! Another one under the post. To put the foot down, one on one last line, does he? Sensational!
Seeing those highlights, and there were plenty, mate. You could do it all. What's your thoughts, memories that come back?
Look, it was a lovely time of life, really, and a lovely chapter. And I wouldn't going back, wouldn't change it. I got to meet a wonderful bunch of mates and players, and we still keep in contact, and when we see each other, you know, that camaraderie's once again established, and the supporters, you know, were, you know, out of this world. I should have probably been more diligent and studied the lines and the angles, because on attack and defence, you know, I prided myself on being one of the fittest in the team, but I burned up so much energy running around to get on the end of a backline movement, ball would go back inside. Well, how did I not bloody predict that? And so, subtle differences both in attack and defence in terms of the angles and the lines. You know, I think Ridgie, you know, from what I understand, studied the hell out of, footage, and he was obviously really committed to making a crack of it. And
you say you weren't committed, bro?
Well, I was committed, but I thought I'd do it. I'd back myself to do it without
naturally.
Having to go, naturally, without having to go
a
through the process of, I thought, you know, your natural ability would give you more of a crack than it would studying. You know, I mean, you do it on gut, don't you? And you look at, you know, some of the big signings who have gone from league to rugby, they battle, and vice versa, rugby to league. It's not an easy transition to make because the angles are so different, and just that instinctive, I need to be here, and you don't get a huge amount of time before you're getting critiqued and judged, you know, so you could have been more diligent as a student of the game, I think, would have helped my game.
Rugby converts. There was a few that happened in 95-96. When did you get the, hey, come on over?
When I was at university, when I was 19, was my first year. And then when I was 20, was my second year playing for Otago. And Graham Lowe wanted me to go over to play in Manly as a 20-year-old. And that must have been, I don't know, not too long after Ridgie. Yeah, so he must have seen something similar in the pair of us. That was way too early because I had aspirations to go a bit further in rugby. But nonetheless, an amazing phone call to my flat in Dunedin from Graham Lowe. So league was always a game that I loved watching. It was State of Origin back then. And because we had such a tight supply on big games to watch the Kiwis versus Aussie, you know, and Tammany Dowling and, you know, and Lonergan and, all of these amazing moments and then watched the State of Origin, I was just so into this game, and it looked, you know, physically very demanding, and you know, they were obviously tough guys doing a very tough sport. So when the opportunity came and I'd finished my degree at university, I didn't want to go, and I had to come up for commercial reasons to Auckland. I thought to better my education or to start a career. And in doing so, I didn't want to play for Auckland against Otago. So when this came along, I thought, new challenge. Yeah. JK's there, who was my hero when I was a kid playing rugby.
Just finished the World Cup at that stage? Was it after the World Cup?
Yeah, it was just after the World Cup. But before we played against Aussie and before it went to rugby got professional, because...
Yeah, sure.
I remember that whole negotiation was quite interesting because, you know, Jonah was offered a phenomenal figure. Mm. I already had a contract with the Warriors and everyone else was offered a number, and because I already had a contract, I said, oh, I'll just row the boat out here and see what I can get. And so I just said, nah, not signing that, nah, not signing that. And I was the second highest paid behind Jonah if I'd taken that contract, you know. So that kind of taught me the power of negotiating. And the more you say no, the more people sometimes want you.
So when you knew you were signing that contract, coming over to the Warriors, did it help knowing that you're going to a club that you've got rugby guys there beside you? So JK, Mark Carter, you know, they could burden of trying to learn this new...
Yeah, it gives you that familiarity, and, you know, Ridgie's there as well. And Mark Carter came over. He was, you know, always an Auckland player.
Yeah.
And we were Otago men, so there was, you know, there was no love lost there. Nice guy, but we were both in the journey together. JK, obviously, I knew from the rugby background. Mm. And I was blown away at just how the closer you get to the middle, how much repetitive backward and forward, how fit you need to be.
Yeah.
And I think that got Mark Carter in the end. I don't think he could get... He was one of the fittest players in rugby, but different type of fitness in league. Yeah. I remember JK, he was always, you know, pretty good advice and, you know, called a spade. Yeah. So it was nice to have the familiarity of those guys around. And to play at Mount Smart with a stadium full of people right behind you.
It's one thing to, you know, have your friends be around to make you more familiar with the transition, but, you know, it's another to play against them. And we're talking about one of your closest friends, John Temu. So what I'm hearing is that you did something a little bit more than what you were meant to on a rugby league field.
We were certainly up for the challenge, both of us, that day. And, you know, I probably was a little skulduggerish in one of my leads with an elbow, which I always did in league. You know, you weren't allowed to, but just before I got whacked, I'd always put my elbow up like that, and I got a lot of people with it, and I got JT in the tooth and knocked his tooth out.
Yeah, because I remember coming off to the game, looking back on some footage, you in hand, and you were talking about something that happened when you left the field.
Yeah, I think we were, you know, explaining how he's got a bloody gap for his tooth, but... No, that was the only protection a little guy like me had against the big forwards when they came in and they were about to whack you. If you can do that, that's why it's illegal, isn't it?
Yeah. The thought is one thing, but to get on the ground, to be there amongst the athletes, to feel what it's like from this amateur environment to professional environment, what do you remember? I know it's a long time ago, Macca.
Oh, look, I think I'm a competitive bugger, so you just line yourself up against the guys who you admire and you try and do your best, you know, and you keep pushing yourself. And so I like that about any form of training. You know, I don't know. I know at the Warriors that we had a ranking system where, you know, they picked the number one athlete right down to the people who needed to work a bit harder. Yeah. When I first came, I could do 3 bench presses on 90 kilos because we hadn't picked the weight up in rugby, and I was so embarrassed about that. And Gene Namu was doing 3 on 125. So every day I'd come into the gym and I'd put it on 100 and see how many I could do. Phil Blake, who do like 20 chin-ups with a 20 kg plate on his back, wide grip. It's incredible. Yeah. Everyone said, which is harder, rugby or league? And rugby, if you booted the ball at fullback, you're running it up, you know. Mm. You'd run back into a line of defence that was waiting for you. So that was, you know, quite direct and, you know, not that was, as long as you put a bit of a sidestep on, you might miss the first guy. But that was pretty physical, and the guys were all short but built, and fit as hell. Yeah. Whereas in rugby, you can be at the of a mall with, you know, 12 guys that fall on top of you, and it's about a ton coming down, and you get your leg in the wrong position. That can be pretty. Yeah. And they were rucking back then as well, so getting jumped on by a 120 kg guy wasn't much fun either. So both games were quite physical, but the front on,
the collisions,
collision, you know, that was, I guess, a wee bit daunting.
Yeah, absolutely. Ian Robson, John Mooney. Now, larger-than-life characters, superstars of where they've been previously and what they do. Talk to me about them, what you remember, and maybe the relationships.
Oh, look, limited relationship with Ian Robson, other than to see him in full swing was quite inspiring. I mean, he could sell, you know, ice to Eskimos. You know, he always overpromised, and but he always did so in a way that was articulate and made people sort of believe and want to come on the journey with him. So, you know, I thought it was a wonderful example of creating a brand. And then John Mooney, well, you know, he'd surfed the biggest wave at Bell's Beach in Australia, from what I understand. And John Kirwan was all about that. And so too was Brandy and some of the Aussies. You know, mate, he's a legend. And he was just such a cruiser, you know. He just he was on the tail end, I think, of his career, and he just sort of sat there and didn't say much, didn't need to, you know. You know, biggest mistake is not asking enough questions. You know, probably in the first season, I think the only thing I said to John Mooney, who wasn't particularly forthcoming with his coaching advice, was, mate, am I doing anything right or wrong? And he said, yeah, just don't go over the effing sideline.
Yeah,
because in rugby, the sideline's your friend, and league, it ain't.
What about walking through the tunnel? Because these are the iconic moments that you and your boys made iconic, man, because you were the OGs, you were the originals coming
well,
through.
Well, you hear the drums, you know, and
how'd you feel,
and then the fire when you came through. And then the songs, I had no choice in the bloody song they played for me, sadly. I'd have gone with something Bob Marley, but is Alice, is the song,
yes,
that, and it stuck, you know.
Yeah, so for everyone at home, and most people will remember, is every time you scored a try, your song would get played. You always try to be that guy that was the life and a bit of brightness in around the place, and that's what I remember as a 19-year-old signing full-time for the club, and you'd just jump on and try and bench press 160 when you hadn't even warmed up. The bus had broken down from, I don't know, we were coming back from the deep south, and then you're out there hitchhiking straight away, then Richie followed you.
Yeah.
A free spirit I could use.
You know, you've got to have fun in this world, you know, and people have, I suspect, got a choice, you know. I always worked out when I got in the team, my job was to, you know, make people laugh and be a bit of a shit stirrer, you know.
Yeah.
And if you did that, there was always a place, you know. Rugby was very structured and formalised. Playing for the All Blacks, if you're a minute late for the bus, doesn't matter whether you're Sean Fitzpatrick, the captain, or a junior in your first game, you're dropped. Whereas league, people are getting on, you know, 5 minutes late.
Yeah.
I remember Mark Horrow getting on. It's one of my first games, and saying, oh, man. And he was about 5 minutes late. And he said, oh, check this out. The bus has got a DVD. He rummaged through his bag and put some bloody questionable DVD on that had me, you know, not knowing whether I was playing a game of league or off to a party. In any event, it was just couldn't be more diametrically opposed.
Yeah, yeah.
And going from sort of switched off to switched on, I found quite difficult because my sort of training had been prepare yourself the whole way for 4 hours and then it's game time, not cruise, switch on and run out. It's just like, how do these guys do that, you know?
Yeah.
So I had to learn that pretty quickly, but it kind of suited my style as well to be able to sort of prepare in your own way.
Yeah, that's 96, you played 18 games, but you must have thought this was easy because you won the first four in a row. Memories of that?
A great first year, you know, and the memories of it were, you know, being picked for the higher honours at the end of the season was like, whoa, this is all happening really fast and it's going according to plan, you know?
Yeah.
And then year two, few of the older guys like Brandy and co would say, you know, mate, year one's a free hit. Year two's when they've done their research on you and they find you out. And year two it felt a lot harder.
You mentioned Greg Alexander, a legend of the game. Your memories of him?
Oh, he obviously was a guy who knew the game inside out, you know, so he just saw things that I couldn't see with new eyes, fresh eyes on it. And he had a way of ghosting as well. Gene Namu was much the same. He was, you know, incredibly quick off the mark, tough guy, and could, you know, spot a gap or put somebody in a gap. And it's done in such close proximity, whereas rugby had more at that stage, had more space. You'd look for a forward in the back line and run around them. And, you know, nowadays you look for a forward in the back line and pass the bloody thing because they're so big and they all defend resolutely like they do in league. So.
Yeah.
Rugby sort of league with line outs and a few more breathers for people to do up their shoelaces and yeah. the refs to pull their pants up a bit higher and ponce around.
One of the absolute goats of the club, Stacey Jones. You would have seen him in those early years. What I remember of Stacey, and how do you describe this young man back then, or what you can on TV?
I do remember. I think he was one of about 15 guys who came out of a paddy wagon after a night in Canberra. And I'd had a shocker, or I didn't like Canberra, at all. I thought it was an awful town.
So. This is the pool story.
Yeah, where Choppy put the Quinton got yep. Choppy to put the $2 coin on the table, and that was basically a courtesy call for one of the locals to whack you if you put the money on the table. So that happened, and then it all ripped into it. And I woke up in the morning and peeled the curtain open, and out of the paddy wagon came Frank Endicott and about 15 of the team, But as a player, which is probably what you're asking.
Yeah, probably.
Exceptional. And the good ones just have time, don't they? And they see things that others don't. And, they hold defences. And I think the good ones always spend, at least one night of their lives in a paddy wagon.
Okay, so 97, Ridgie, your mate. Who signed a great contract with the club. He finally starts playing some games. Let's talk about Ridgie, because I've got a lot of admiration for Ridgie. The bloke he is, the leader he is.
Lovely guy. He and I just, for some reason, click, and we don't pick up the phone and talk to one another, but if we see each other, it's just best mates. I remember saying to him on the field when we were playing against the Broncos, mate, make sure you yap at me and tell me what position to be in, because I was marking Steve Wren off at centre.
The Pearl.
And I'm just going, this is not a place I really want to be. And they scored, and Reggie was just going, Mackie, you prick. And because he gave everyone arses. I'm saying, mate, you're meant to be my mate here. You're meant to help me, give me a bit of yap. So he was ruthless, very committed, did his due diligence on every team he played, and he gave it to us from the back. He was the guy, he was the leader of that team, So I've got a huge amount of respect for Ridgie from a league perspective, not much else. Yeah. Not much respect anywhere else.
That's crazy, because I think, I was very lucky to come in, yourself, Quinton Pongia, Matthew Ridge. Okay, Happy Frank, he became your coach here as well. Talk to me about Happy Frank and his style of coaching versus John Mooney's style.
Oh, Frank was a bit more of a communicator. We had a whale of a time. He was lots of fun off the field as well as constructive with his criticism on it. The Super League, we went to Europe and
that World Club Challenge.
Wonderful trip, that one, We thoroughly enjoyed that.
He tells a story about you after World Club Challenge mentioning a hammy, but he reckons it's something else that you're trying to save.
Well, I broke my nose badly. One of the pommy props, they were dirty, the poms, dropped a knee on my nose, and I felt for it, and it wasn't there, it was here. And so we went in at half time, and Frank's given his sermon, and I'm just looking in the mirror going, oh, I'm poked. This is not good, And Frank's saying, come back here, Mark. He said, don't worry about it. You got a nose like me now. And I said, Frank, that's not f***ing helping, mate. Yeah. I can't say therefore.
No, we'll beep that.
It's not helping, I mean, nobody wants a nose like a fist. And so I said to the doc, right, take me and get this bloody thing straightened, mate. I've got to go into London, and there's opportunities afloat. And go to the guy, and he said, no, we can't straighten it till it resets. And so I went back to the minibar and drank it and whacked it and managed to get it. I know Mark Graham did it. He was a bit tougher than I was. I was more vain, so I bloody whacked it back after a few grogs and managed to get it kind of straight.
Macca, your final year at the club was 1998, but you only played a couple of games in first grade.
The accountants at the Warriors made sure that the squeeze came on. So it was a tough time in the third year when I was sort of relegated to the reserve grade, because being a high-profile signing, you were going, and I think they relied on the fact that, he'll push off, he won't be able to take this. There's a bit of a knock to the confidence. And the moment they did that, I played half a season. I think we played a few games together.
You did.
And, remember playing against Wellington, and all these dudes were just gunning for me. You little Wellington College prick, I'm going to show you. And I came off. That was the toughest game of league I ever played.
Yeah. Macca, you played fullback, centre, wing. Your favourite position and why?
Oh, I like fullback. You just had a bit more action, so you touched the ball a bit more often. Often you touched it with a bit more space, it felt. So when the ball got kicked deep, you had a bit of a chance to, you know, get some fresh air. Whereas on the wing, you know, your job was to take the ball off the line when the ball was kicked back. So you're running into, you know, forwards, which are three thick. Once I was taken off the line, I ended up back in the dead ball. I remember Ridgie getting injured, you know, and I had the audacity in my own mind to go, well, I'll just take his position then.
Yeah, you know,
but he was much better fullback than I was. But I thought, look, I'm probably a yard quicker than him. You know, I reckon I've got a better step than him. I'm not afraid. He's not afraid. You know, it didn't work out as I imagined it back then. Don't tell him that, though, the prick. He's living in France, isn't he? So you won't see
that. He's living the life, mate. What about the memories when they put up those torpedo kicks or those bombs and you just sort of...
Yeah, it's a little bit different
to the rugby.
Yeah, it is a bit different. I mean, they practice long and hard, and the spiral is a prick of a thing to try and catch, you know. And particularly with league, if they get the timing right, you've got to get off the ground to compete for it. And it's hard enough to catch that standing on the ground, but...
Yeah.
All I remember is you just watch that ball and don't watch anything else and go up 100% committed, you know, and lift your knee and elbow.
Okay, so what didn't come easy to you in the game?
Angles.
Yeah.
You know, angles. I remember defending at fullback, you know, and somebody would make a break and I never bloody knew where to be.
Yeah.
I didn't know whether I was meant to push up from the inside out or whether I start from the outside coming in or who I was marking or whether I, you know, and I didn't know where the gap would happen, you know, so that's where I mean positionally I was often out. Yeah. And if you're out on defence positionally by, you know, 2 or 3 feet and a big guy comes through, he can often bust your tackle, and that happened to me a couple of times.
Macca, there'll be a number of players when you're in the change room before a game, you look across and you go, I'm so much happier that he's playing. Who are those players and what about them were the reason you were thinking that way?
Well, I loved it when Tia was playing. He was just fun, and he was very, very good. Like, he was solid in defence. He ran really hard on attack. In terms of the forwards, it was always good when you had Joe Vaagunna playing because he was a physical presence. Grant Young was a pretty tough sort of a dude as well. Dennis Betts was a character, you know, and then you've got the halves, well, Stacey and Gene, Namu, Sid Eru was a tough dude. I mean, wonderful guys, all of them, you know, and just to be on the field with characters like that and men like that who did the hard graft was bloody pleasure.
Macca, a lot of talent in those teams that you played in, none played finals. Did you think they would have done better?
I think it comes down to the top 2 inches, and I think there was probably too much pressure put on in the early years and too greater expectation by, you know, the likes of the great marketer Ian Robson, who would say, we're going to win this season. And so the guys would go in with the mentality of, geez, there's some pressure on us and the whole country behind us, and they'd do well against the teams you're expected to lose against, which would give even more pressure, and then you'd choke against the teams that you're expected to win against. So I think probably it's an expectation. Yeah. Nothing comes too easily, and the teams that have won it have, you know, grafted it out over a longer period of time. So I think 24, 25 is our year.
Macca, can you just sum up your time at the club and what it meant to you?
A new challenge. Meeting wonderful guys would be the key takeaway. You know, playing a sport that is possibly the toughest in the world, and, you know, holding your own on the odd occasion, looking back and being a very small part of a much bigger story. I guess, you know, when you take your last breath, you might go, that was pretty cool.
Yeah. Macca, once a warrior, always a warrior, brother. Thank you for your service in the jumper.
Pleasure.
I'm Monty Beetham. Thank you for tuning in. I will see you next week for another episode of Once a Warrior.
Former All Black, Mark Ellis. Ellis up from fullback. Mark Ellis! Try time! To get on the outside, he's done it! Mark Ellis! And Ellis should disappear. Ellis! Another one under the post. Ellis to put the foot down, one on one, last line, does he? Sensational!